When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Obviously, we're going to get a little bit of cold weather this week, which would be really, really nice. It gets back hot again. 70s and Christmas is what they're predicting, and that's not a lot of fun. A lot more fun when it's in the 40s and 50s. I want to thank the folks out at H2O. We did the Toys for Tots this past Wednesday. It was great. Great turnout. Great event. Raised a good amount of money and a lot of toys. And I understand they're still coming in. And we want to thank everyone for their generosity. And we're looking for that again this Wednesday. I'll be at the Metropolitan Health Group office at 4454 Transcontinental. That's between West Esplanade and the lake. Beautiful location there. We will be joining up with Second Harvester's Food Bank, right? And we're looking for packaged food, goods, as well as donations for Second Harvest Food Bank. Want to make sure that no one goes hungry at Christmas. There's been huge demand for the services of Second Harvest over the hurricane season, and they need to restock their shelves, and hopefully we're able to help them in that endeavor. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll visit with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust, in the 12 o'clock hour. We'll talk about the insurance challenge. He will explain what his perspective on what those challenges are. What does reconciliation mean for the federal budget? What tariffs can the president enact unilaterally without having to go to anyone else? The best sellers this Christmas. And we'll talk about the New Orleans Pollock, who financed the American Revolution. And we'll talk about a number of other things as well. Jeff Nowak joins us at 11:30. We'll talk about the Saints game, loss to the Commanders. That was an interesting game. Josh Flagg, Chief Technology Officer at the Louisiana Economic Development, will talk to us about Meta building a massive $10 billion artificial intelligence data center in Northeast Louisiana. We'll talk about how that came about to fruition and where we are with that, obviously. Wanted to talk about a number of different things that came up over the weekend and continues towards the end of last week and over the weekend. So here we go again, round and round and round on the garbage contract in the French Quarter. The city goes out for a one-year emergency contract for sanitation services. And it seems as though IV Waste is the winner of that contract. You know the owner, Sidney Torres. His bid of $5.9 million was the lowest among the four bidders, and he claims that he will begin service on December 23rd. However, we have two lawsuits, I think, that are being held or being heard, or two claims that are being heard this morning in civil district court. And I guess what is going to determine a lot of this is what happens in these lawsuits. Judge Paulette Irons will hear arguments in both cases, and we're not clear exactly how this is all going to align with this contract that we have. I've talked to several folks in the administration, in city government, and they tell me that Torres is going to have the contract for a year. So we'll see how all of this aligns. It's important. Again, though, why is this so difficult? It's amazing. In the emergency contract, we were able to have everything laid out. You know, bids came in, make the selection. Doesn't seem like that there's a big issue there. Whereas before, we had all the time in the world and nothing but problems. So Henry Consulting, one of the litigants this morning, is asking the judge to move forward with his contract. And he's also challenging the council's authority to approve professional service contracts in the first place, which we know how that all came about. Obviously, he's not happy with that because you only have to make one person happy, the administration, the mayor, that is, as opposed to four members of a council. And then obviously the remaining one by Mr. Romelli, who came on the show, claims the administration improperly expanded the scope and value of the Henry Consulting contract during post-award negotiations, which are always problematic as well. Because if you need more scope, put it in the original RFQ, RFP, right? Don't wait till afterwards and then increase the scope, depending on who wins. Right? And that equates to what? Yep, you got it, more money. And here we go again. And it's interesting. It looks like they, obviously, although the council doesn't have to vote on this, it looks as though they would get the lion's share of the votes, IV Waste, that is, who is the largest trash holder in the city and services about 70% of the locations outside of the French Quarter and the DDD at the present time. So this company that most people are familiar with in the aftermath of Katrina and the work that was done is actually in the garbage business. They actually own something. You know, those things called garbage trucks. They actually have those, which one would think would be a reasonable expectation of a responder to a bid for garbage removal. One would think that. Probably one would have that experience in most other cities where similar services are put out to bid. But no, not in this city. There's actually not a requirement that the primary bidder, vendor, actually own any garbage removal equipment. You can just go in with a shell and then outsource everything, and we all believe that that's a good way to do business in this city. I don't get it. Why add multiple layers where you have parties who can then disagree? Oh, really? That can happen? Well, it's happening right now. I mean, this is craziness. Not to beat this thing to death, but I mean, you know, this is an indication of where we find ourselves, where there's a breakdown in governance. When you're looking at a business cycles, and how you're going to procure services here, which is one of the primary functions and responsibilities of the city, and you would think that they would be looking to act in the best interests of the city in how they do this. And you would think that they would want this more direct line or connection to the vendor from administration to the actual individual that actually has some trucks, right? You know, those things they call garbage trucks, you know, the thing that they throw the garbage in the back of. Be interesting. Maybe we should show the city pictures of what we're talking about and where, you know, these companies that bid, that maybe they should have some of these and they should put together a pictorial attached to the RFQ, RFP, to say these are the items that we're talking about that you actually have to prove some ownership of, that you actually have. And you've actually operated these. You actually have employees that actually get behind the wheel of this truck. And you do recognize that they go down the city streets and they pick up garbage cans. Now, it's a shame that we have to get that elementary on this show, but it serves as a reminder to those in the decision-making process at city government that this is what you ought to be doing, is to have that direct line to the individuals that are actually providing the services, that you don't have to go through someone else, and then they end up in an argument separate and apart from the communications with you. You don't hear anything. You're not a party to it because you're not a party to the contract between them, the sub, and the prime. And you're sitting on the sidelines getting the complaints from John Q. Citizen about your garbage not being picked up. And you are what? Impotent. For those of you that don't know what that is, you can't do anything. You're done. You're out. You're sitting and waiting for other people to decide what's the best way to resolve their conflict. Meanwhile, the hue and cry from the taxpayers out there, the rhetoric's rising, the heat's rising, the garbage is stinking, and they're fighting. It's a great model. It's a wonderful model. Maybe they'll learn an important lesson here. I doubt it. Because this goes on and on and on and on. I mean, the level of incompetence as it relates to the procurement of services and just being aware of the primary functions and responsibilities, it never ceases to amaze me on so many different fronts. Another good example of this is, situation with the school board. Not necessarily the settlement. There was an employment contract they wanted to get rid of, Superintendent Dr. Avis Williams, obviously. They didn't even realize that they were overstating their revenue. Their revenue comes from the millage that you pay on your property, right? This is really hard to figure out, right? So you go to the assessor's office, and you ask the assessor for their roles and what they sent to the collector, the Department of Revenue for the city of New Orleans, who's going to generate the property tax bills. And you ask for the summary report of how much that generates. You then look historically to see what percentage of the total amount of taxes historically are actually collected in a given year. And that's going to give you a pretty good feel for where you're going to be from a revenue perspective, the largest line item revenue that you have in your budget. And then you can figure out how you're going to budget those dollars from there moving forward. There are grants and there's other things that you're going to get money from. And, you know, there may be some of these schools, some kind of fees and stuff that generate income for you as well. But basically, that's it. Well, the CFO hired by the CEO doesn't tell the CEO, according to the CEO, that they had overstated that amount. They had actually budgeted too much in expenditures, and they don't have the revenue to support what they actually budgeted in expenditures. Here we are. We're through the year. Oops. Houston, we have a problem. Right? Primary function of what the CEO does. In fact, in her contract, it actually says that this is some of her duties. To mind the ship relative to finances, which is, you would expect to find that in any CEO's contract, right? So here we are, we're trying to bring an end to this agreement, and it's got another year, I think, on the agreement, and now we have this secret settlement of $335,000. So the settlement itself is not what's really, the barn burner here. That's not what this is really all about. What they don't want is their dirty laundry being aired. Because the CEO is going to say a whole bunch of things about the board, about the lack of resources, about this, about that, and everything else. The board then is going to say that they have a bad hire, that this individual, the due diligence that they did in the background of this individual is not up to snuff. She failed the students and the parents and the board and yada, yada, yada. So it's in their best interest to just move on and in the agreement basically say that they have nothing bad to say about each other. In fact, everything's rosy with the exception of one thing, that she could never work for the district again in case some other idiot is sitting over there and decides that maybe we would want to try her again, which don't put that out of the realm of possibility. I could cite a couple of examples of that actually happening in the city already. So we're all up in arms about this. And the only thing about the transparency is really not the terms and conditions of what was in the employment agreement. It's really about them airing their dirty laundry. What is it that they're hiding? What is it that they know? And what is it that they don't want you and I to know? And I have to suspect that it's probably a lot. So they hurry up and they confect this agreement. The confection of the agreement is not out of the ordinary when you have employment agreements that you're going to terminate early. It's all of the details that support why they're doing this. And we still don't really have a clear answer as to how this debacle even occurred. And how we got to the point where we are already. So here we are with two different scenarios, and last week we talked about a third with the RTA and providing transportation for the disabled population. And some of the comments that were made by the CEO there, who actually had the audacity to ask the board to hire a coach to coach them and teach them about what they're supposed to do. Interesting. And these are the folks that we're hiring. And we wonder why we find ourselves in a predicament that we find ourselves in. Maybe we should pay attention. Read the tea leaves. They're pretty revealing. And find out about these folks. And maybe get more probative. Why you're there. Why certain things are being done. How they're being done. And maybe you'll become a better fiduciary for the public. But this is in a span of 3 weeks. We have three major organizations caught up in governance deficiencies. And we wonder why we find ourselves in the position that we find ourselves in. It's absolutely amazing. And in the end, we're just paying more money, more money, more money, more, because we've got nothing but money. How many times have we heard, it's not a function of money, it's a function of execution? It's amazing. For the longest time, it was about the money. Now we got the money, now it's about execution. And we got a lot of money under the Biden administration, under the Inflation Reduction Act and everything else. But you got to be in a position to receive the money. What does that mean? You got to know what to do with it. You got to know how to handle it. You have to have the governance infrastructure and the execution in order to make something good come out of the money. Because the money sitting in the bank is not necessarily good. Could be great. But unless you execute on the spend, on the procurement, you're dotting every I, crossing every T, you're meeting the timelines, you're doing it in an effective way. And unless and until we get to that point, it's not of much value. And this continues on and on on and on. I was just listening to Eugene Green in an interview with Tommy Tucker. Now, I like Eugene Green. I think he's well-intentioned. But you know what I don't like is when there's this mindset about the constituents of this city having a complaint about driving down their streets and seeing a homeless camp that's full of garbage, collection of bicycles and other materials and stuff that they're going to ultimately bring to the salvage yard, grocery baskets. I don't think they belong to the homeless. I think it's a pretty safe assumption it belongs to some retail outlet that then becomes their mode of transporting all of these goods that they're collecting, that we have to put up with panhandling at all of these street corners, right? Burning incense at one of the corners now, right? It's become just this big show. Then the sideshow is the public urination and defecation on the sidewalks, seen it all. You know, the blocking of the main travel portion of the roadway and those sleeping on the sidewalks. And it's almost as if they're wanting us to feel guilty about demanding more, that we don't understand the homeless population. I don't need to understand the homeless population. What I understand is the what, the outcome. I don't need to understand the why. I need to understand the what, the outcome. Why do they get to choose when and how and why and where they're going to set up camps? I don't get to choose when and why and how and where I want to park. There's sanctions. Something as simple as that. When I visit downtown urban centers, there are places that I can park and places that I can't park. If I put my vehicle on the neutral ground of Canal Street, guess what? There's going to be a sanction. However, if I put a tent on Canal Street, there's no sanction. There has to be an understanding that I'm living in an urban populated area, this thing called a city. And as a result of that, I have to be more empathetic and sympathetic to the plight of the individual that put the tent there, as opposed to the person that put the Suburban. Now, this is pretty basic. And it seems to be that no one's really understanding what this is all about. There are just a couple of things that we need and we desire. I don't know. It's interesting about where this is going to go. But now I have to feel guilt about demanding more, that this is a normal occurrence. And this is what Councilman Green said. It's a normal occurrence when living in urban populated city. You think maybe that's why there's been a flight to the suburbs? I wonder. You tell me. When we come back, we'll go to the talk lines, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us. And then you have to wonder about the state of the law, right? So in dealing with the homeless population, so now we have developed a right here that if we collect other people's garbage and we take possession of it and we pile it up on public property, not property owned by the homeless person or anyone else, Matt, owned by all of you, the taxpayers, that we have now created this right that we have to give them notice. because they took possession of other people's property, put it in a pile on public property, and then we've now created a right that they have that before the governmental agency can go and remove property left there by individuals who have no right to be there in the first place, that we have to give them notice in order to go and clean those areas out. Interesting. Now, there's no way to know who this belongs to, right? There's no way to really know, has it been abandoned? There's no mail going there. There's no traditional ways of establishing that someone is actually there and conducting their personal business or otherwise. But yet we've created this right in doing it. If you leave a car too long someplace, blocking a driveway or whatever, parking on somebody else's property, what happens? It's removed. But when it comes to this identity in society today, we are creating all kinds of rules to serve as an impediment from government taking the actions that its constituents are demanding, because these constituents are insensitive. They're not empathetic. They're not sympathetic. They don't care about people. They haven't earned the right to complain. I thought maybe by paying your taxes on time, supporting your local economy was enough. Well, I was wrong. And if you thought that was enough as well, too, you were wrong. Because what I heard this morning is you have to do more. There's more that you have to do. You have to maybe give up personal time. You may have to maybe give up more of your money in support of not-for-profits that actually deal with this, or donate money to government to do what you've allegedly elected them to do in the first place. You have to do all of these things because it's a different set of circumstances now. And how do we know that? Because that's what they tell us. So we're just supposed to take that at face value and say, okay. My question is, what's next? What's next that we are supposed to take at face value that we are going to have to feel guilty about because we have an expectation that something is going to be done by the governing entities in our cities and states across this country? What's next? I'm kind of curious. Would love to hear from you, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. I sense the frustration. I hear about it. Almost every function I go to, folks stop me and it's like, Newell, I heard your conversation the other day about this, that, or other. I don't understand. Why is this so hard? Why is it that if we do this, we have rules where we live that we can't put our garbage can out for Monday morning pickup until after 3 p.m. on the curb? So what if I'm leaving to go out of town at 10 a.m.? Under the rules, I'm not supposed. And we have people that complain about the fact that, you know, this is going on at 10 a.m. and I get a call from local government wanting to know about that. Why is it that because you're there as the homeowner paying taxes and everything else, there's a follow-up on all of this by government asking about, what you know, put your garbage can out at 10 a.m. It's not supposed to be out there until 3 p.m. that afternoon. You know, in the outlying parishes, you get garbage pickup twice a week. In the city, only once, because I guess they're more prudent with garbage creation than we are in the suburbs, those horrible people in the suburbs, wasting all of that product and throwing it away. How is it that this works? And what about notice? It's amazing how in each and every jurisdiction we're creating these separate rights for individuals in certain activities, urban versus suburban areas, and things along those lines. And we wonder why people are frustrated. We wonder why the out-migration of upper-income individuals are greater than the in-migration. Because there's expectations. People actually don't mind, for the most part. They understand that there has to be a tax base and there has to be taxes. What they don't understand is the lack of leadership and the inefficient operation of government. They have a very difficult time understanding it. Because most people work for an organization that actually operates fairly efficiently. Otherwise, they won't exist. They won't succeed. They won't stay around for long. They go under. So they take that experience set, and from that experience set, they actually establish expectations of what they want to see. And I apologize for this elementary conversation. As you can see, I'm frustrated. Because I just continue to see this over and over and over again and don't understand why. And there's nothing but impediments put in place of trying to move the ball forward every time someone wants to take the ball and run with it. Look, there are a lot of things you can like about the governor, Jeff Landry. There's a lot of things you can not like about the governor, Jeff Landry. But I will say this. On this issue of going down there and cleaning that area up, that is actually his responsibility. That land under certain areas of that elevated expressway belongs to the state of Louisiana. He created a situation where he wanted to get it cleaned up, and he did it. And then we want to make him the villain for actually doing what the taxpayers and the voters have actually requested of him to do. Because he wasn't sympathetic. He wasn't empathetic. He didn't give the collectors of junk in and around our city that piled it up on public property and claimed some type of ownership. He didn't give them their due, where they actually have more property rights than you and I have. Consider for a moment if you just went around the city, collected stuff, and stuck it under the interstate. You think that there would be much empathy and sympathy for you in interacting with you, or you think you might get a ticket for dumping? Even in spite of telling people, no, you don't understand. I was just putting it there as a resting place because I don't have that place. Because if I put that in the resting place in my neighborhood, I am going to get written up and there's going to be sanctions. So I thought, because everybody else was doing this under the interstate, foolish me, that I could just put that as the resting place until I'm able to do something with it. That obviously inures to my economic benefit. Oh, wait, you're telling me that that's unsightly and you really don't want that there? Well, but how does that work for that person over there with the tent next to it? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't pitch a tent. I'll be right back. Stay with me. Welcome back. I think the thing that explains everything away, and no matter what you want to do, is if you pitch a tent next to it, it'll create pause. I think that's what I'm figuring out here this morning. Let's go to Wayne. Wayne, you're up. What say you?
How you doing, New? Thanks for taking my call, man. Quick question for you. Do you take blood pressure medicine by any chance?
No, not yet.
I finally got through to you because I see and I hear these conversations about the city that we get on. And I mean, you're a smart guy. You're intelligent. Does any of this surprise you?
Look, I am, believe it or not, an optimist. I supported a lot of people for a lot of public offices, many of whom did great jobs and many of whom failed miserably. And it frustrates me because a lot of this stuff is simple. It just requires that you show up at work every day and you pay attention and you treat every activity as though it matters and it's not just busy work. So that's my mindset.
Yeah, and I mean, let's do an incompetence test for a job requirement in the city. I mean, we should have thousands of openings because at the end of the day, how many people care about their job? And the result is what you're talking about. And they just kick the can down the road.
Well, one way you care, first off, you have to have you have to be in it for the right reasons. You know, I used to say this all the time. I can't manage 70% players. You're either 100% in or you got to go. And you owe it to yourself to go. Because if you're only experiencing a 70% satisfaction rate in where you are employed and what you do, you're not happy. You know, so leave. You owe it to yourself, your peers, and others to get the heck out. I need 100% players that are coming in wanting to make a difference, showing up for work with a bounce in their step, knowing that when I was the leader, Newell Norman was going to remove impediments, make high hurdles, low hurdles, make it easier for me to succeed in my job each and every day so that we continue to make a difference each and every day for people. And that's not hard. It's all about the attitude. It's not about what I'm owed. It's about what I owe. And, you know, I always looked at public service as a privilege and treated it as such and not an expectation for what I could suck out of the community each and every day. And unfortunately, I should say fortunately, more people are not like that than there are. But the ones that are have to be rooted out. We got to get them out. Got to vote them out. You give them a shot, they don't perform, get them the hell out. Because they will do nothing but ruin your community. We see it every day. How many constant reminders do we have to have? We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Josh Flagg, Chief Technology Officer at the Louisiana Economic Development, talking about Meta's new massive $10 billion artificial intelligence data center.